Hey, welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon. Say hello, Phil.
Hello, Phil.
Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome, Phil.
Yes, let's not beat this to death. They'll think we're the Three Stooges. We proved that during the show.
Two Stooges.
Well, listen, there's Shay.
You know. Okay, now we're three.
Okay, there are three. We're going to talk about some interesting matters. pardon our light treatment, but it is life or death. But what the heck? We have the balloon to discuss, Canada's role and a spot, a place in the great balloon crisis. And we'll also talk about this decision of the Prime Minister to name someone to lead an Islamophobia. I'm not actually sure what they thought they were doing, but it's been a foolish unfolding, and we need to talk a little bit about that. I'm sure Phil has an opinion. There is a demonstration that's going to be held in Washington, D.C. on February the 19th. I think it is, and to me, this is news, particularly for listeners of Taylor Report, because we have a war that is spinning out of control. It is in Europe, as people like to say, and become alarmed, because only when Europeans get in wars is it of great concern to Europeans, I guess, North Americans. So we want to talk about that. There is also we may touch on the matter of Peru, where Canada has a lousy position. So we'll deal with that. And Phil, there's a matter I was going to ask you about. You're looking into this demonstration of February the 19th. Did you find that site?
I'm still looking for the site, aware of it.
I have the relevant correlation then. Okay. So let's start with this matter of the balloon, which, by the way, it was big news for about 3 days. Today's media actually sort of put it aside. Maybe it's partly because there's been this terrible earthquake that has struck Turkey, and would like to point out that also Syria. And I noticed the Prime Minister and others saying, oh, they would like to help Turkey. You have sanctions on Syria, and it is time to get rid of those sanctions. This is a humanitarian issue. It is a 7-point-something quake. When you hear the number 7, you know it is major. I once took a ride on a 7, and it is really something. The damage is horrific in the region. I was reading Charmin Arwani. If you don't read Charmin Arwani, you're missing out. She's a very outstanding journalist, editor of The Cradle. She said that she's, of course, in Beirut. She said her building shook so much or swayed so much that she was seasick. That's the kind of quake it is. And let's focus again, Syria, saying that there needs, when it's a humanitarian issue, you do not parse the subject and say, Turkey's experiencing a quake. Lebanon, Turkey, Syria are the hardest hit. Apparently Syria and Turkey are the most, they can have the most damage. So let's make sure that the Canadian government doesn't get away with this thing of splitting hairs when it comes to damage to human beings. The fact that they will now be in exposure to terrible, there's cold there this time of year, is very bad. They already have, because of sanctions, medicines that they can't get, all that, the doors should be open. And But we're not. I don't think we're going to be hearing the name Syria from the Canadian government. They've been. Canada has contributed to the misery of the people of Syria, because Canada was a part and parcel, is part and parcel of a plan to remove the government of Syria. If you go back, it was President Obama said the president of Syria had to step down. See, those are our values. I mean, if you have you elect the president of the United States, he gets to tell the president of another country to step down. Those are our values. So it's a good time to quit on the empire line of thought and think like human beings, think like the true international community, which comes to the aid of any people who have been experienced hurricanes, earthquakes, damage of that kind. But it's also a time to correct the political nonsense out of Ottawa and Washington. And we're going to come to that later when we talk about this demonstration on February the 19th, because we're looking for new paths out of this morass. On the matter of the balloon, Phil, I don't know if you I'm sure you follow it closely, but here's the part that's, you know, from speaking now in Canada, we're told U.S. was aware that this balloon had passed over the Aleutians. Then it passed over British Columbia, and then it made its way. It's between 60 and 80,000 feet. It would appear to be what the Chinese say it is, which is a meteorological device. Americans are not capable of one. They've been trying to develop balloons that can do this for their own reasons. So, as they said in Dr. Strangelove, we have a balloon gap. We are falling behind in the balloon race. This is an illustration. My theory was that perhaps the Chinese were actually passing over to see how America's balloon project was coming along. They have one. You have to know. The United States has balloons. They use these balloons themselves. Now, of course, if you follow Wolf Blitzer, who has the best CIA contacts, as a matter of fact, probably CIA himself, it has to be called a spy balloon. There's no evidence it was a spy balloon. But going back to the path of the balloon, they say, well, you're in our airspace. When that happens, there are protocols. If a device, an alien device, another state, either a plane, balloon, and if you regard it as something to be concerned about, you actually warn them. This is what you do. You say, you are now entering our airspace, and you are to change course. And since they identified it as a balloon that had come from China, the obvious thing to do would be to contact Chinese authorities. And they have phones. They call each other. I was struck by when the matter of Donald Trump stepping down as president at the end of his term, and there was a turmoil at the U.S. Congress. The general who was in charge of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the top guy, called his Chinese counterpart to say, things are going as usual. There's no reason to be concerned. You know, I thought that was a little strange, actually. But they got contact. So, all right, it's not flying along jet propulsion. It's just floating along. So you have plenty of time. You don't have to worry. It's over Canada. Who cares about that? I mean, from Washington point of view, obviously they didn't tell. I haven't seen anybody say that they told Canada. Or whether these things are kind of one assumes that they know about air traffic and that they know about balloon movement and that kind of thing. They're aware of it. So I haven't heard from any quarter in Canada, military or otherwise, that they were aware of it. Because if it enters your airspace and you don't want it there, if it's bad, you tell whoever you think the proprietor is and say, you can't come, you know, and you alert everybody. And by the way, in the case of ordinary provocation, general practice of countries like North Korea, U.S., North Korea, U.S. is continually flying into North Korean airspace to test them. They also have done it many times with China, where they will send a plane into disputed airspace to see what the reaction is from the other side. It's a game, and the reaction always is from either side. You're entering our airspace. We're warning you, and then it's a 1, 2, 3. It gets worse and worse. So why didn't they say something? Where was the? Because it is, as I understand it, it relies on wind currents, the balloon, and they have some control over it. It's not something they can really control, but they can. It's a little bit like a ship. It's like they have propellers, small, and they can control where the sails would be. In other words, if you want to pick up wind, take you this direction, you move the sail to get that wind to move you, right? You're probably a sailor, right, Phil?
I understand the principle of sailing ships. Yeah.
You're like me. You get seasick, so the heck with it. But, so in other words, the first thing you do is contact somebody and say, you're entering our airspace. There's going to be a problem. But they let this matter go until it was, they said, over Montana. I love the way the U.S., by the way, tells us the names of all the places that they don't want spied upon. Most people didn't know they were there. Say, what?
We now know that Montana is a very important place to hide things.
You don't want to be in Montana. There's people claim it. Utah is on the list, but no, Montana would have. If you don't want to be incinerated, you wouldn't. So it has that quality of a highly manipulated business. Remember, by the way, Biden is going to be talking to Congress. I think it's tomorrow night. Biden, is Canada's president, and so his speech tomorrow is very important. Am I right about it? The State of the Union is called tomorrow.
And yes, some very rude things often get said around the time of the State of the Union when you're in times like this. I remember that the first time Obama gave one, he was called a racist name by one of the Republican congressmen.
I think he was called a liar.
He was also called boy. He said, "You're lying, boy." And that was pretty.
I didn't remember that, but I would think it's occasionally, very rarely does that happen. That had to do with American racism. It's definitely a fact.
But now it's this hyper partisanship that everything can be made into an issue to accuse the other guy of destroying the country. That seems to be the
doing what.
Destroying the country. In other words,
it's always been. That's a factor. This address to Congress is, it's always important. But you could be suspicious that he's trying to do what presidents often do, which is make themselves into action figures. He put on his dark glasses, which he likes to do that because that's supposed to be the tough Biden. So tough Biden came in and said, "I told him to shoot it down," and he'll be able to say that. And the Republicans, the argument, I love American politics for the breadth of the debate. He said, "I ordered him to shoot it down," and the Republicans said, "You should have ordered him earlier to shoot it down." And so that's quite a what you could can put a piece of paper between the two positions. It's outrageous that the U.S. has chosen to do it in this way. But we certainly in Canada, there ought to be some question. So if we're all such close pals, how come Canada wasn't the first to hear about this? And they say Aleutians, then they say British Columbia, and then it got to Montana. It should have been noted the first time. If it's an issue, airspace is an issue, it should have been the first time the balloon was in that space or approaching. And again, I don't know, they're trying to advertise the ineptitude because usually they tell us that they can, you know, read street signs in Beijing, or they know all about what's going on in Zimbabwe, or they can, you know, they have all this capacity. And then all of a sudden, a balloon shows up in Montana, and everybody says, what's that? Actually, I saw one theory that they didn't want to mention it until somebody actually looked up in the sky and said, what is that? And then they said, oh, yeah, well. You know. Anyhow, the protocols around this don't make any sense. If it was approaching, then there should have been a statement and an interaction with the Chinese and say, well, we don't want that balloon in our airspace. And that would have gone back to the Aleutians. And Canadians should say, well, we would like to have been told if it was over us, but Americans didn't apparently tell them. So all that is a matter. Of course, having Top Gun go and shoot it down is, if you're shooting down balloons and you're bragging about it, I don't know what I can't be helped, actually. Tied in with it was another curious matter, and these we're just talking about this on the Taylor Report because we think, you know, things ought to go through our minds about this. Secretary of State Blinken, was visiting South Korea when this occurred. And he suddenly said, I'm now going to cancel the meeting I was going to have with the Chinese in a couple of days. Well, the Chinese said, actually, that meeting wasn't agreed. I mean, it wasn't confirmed. So he's trying to create a kind of a head-scratching issue, because it had not been announced. The way you do this, and again, we're talking about, you know, the protocols of politics. One party doesn't announce there's going to be a meeting. So when Blinken says, well, I'm not going to come now, they said, well, we hadn't invited you. I mean, you know, there is that issue. And we went through that with Trudeau when he had this, he blocked the hallway in order to talk to President Xi of China, and had a funny little episode in the hallway where if you want to have a meeting, you arrange it. You don't say, so that you have your, a photo op. In this case, Blinken introduced something which should actually cause everybody a little concerned. Is why would you say that you were going to have a meeting when you don't have both parties announcing it? So to say that you were going to have a meeting, you're getting ahead of yourself. That isn't confirmed. And so, again, this is the kind of incoherent behavior that we get from the Washington's leaders. And they seem to be playing only to a domestic, their own audience. And Americans are a very parochial population. And so, and this concept of exceptionalism plays into it. Everything is told entirely in terms of their own interests and a multinational approach indicates too much respect for others. The main thing is America's talking to itself as that's the only important. The other people, other states and whatnot, they don't say to the American people, well, in order to do this, I have to talk to so-and-so. Nobody wants to hear about you had to talk to so-and-so. You tell so-and-so. And I watched on an interview or a panel of people talking about American scholars and Chinese scholars talking to each other about the current bad blood. And both Americans agreed to say we regard China as a rising power and a threat to American dominance, and therefore America is defending itself, which is nuts. It's absolutely nuts, defending. And again, this is a time to talk to Prime Minister Trudeau, Chrystia Freeland, and others who keep playing this silly song called Our Values, because our values are mutual respect for other states, respect for the United Nations, respect for the UN Charter. That would be values. But when you have a state saying our dominance is being threatened, and therefore we are defending ourselves, that isn't, whose values are those? And when they say our, they're not talking about anybody other than the U.S. As a power. So this is it exposes the term which is being used over and over, our values and democracy. There's nothing democratic about saying our dominance is what's crucial. That's as a matter of fact, it's an utterly undemocratic thing to say, because you're not being threatened. Nobody threatened you. Nobody said we're going to overcome you and we're going to defeat you. None of that. This is simply a developing country. And when the United States says to the most successful developing country in our epoch that we're not going to allow you to develop at our and because we consider it at our expense, that's a notice to all the countries that are called developing countries, all of Africa, all of South America, most of Asia are developing. And so here you have a power that says, well, if you do that, we might lose our dominance. So they're saying democratic values have nothing to do with it. You're talking about an empire. Another point to make about I was saying that Biden is going to be the action figure, but he's going to be able to go in and brag that he shot down a balloon. And don't underestimate that as a necessary feature of the American presidency. It has, in all these years, including Mr. Obama, who you referred to, and the others, they all have to have an action. They have to smash somebody. They have to drop a bomb on them. They have to fire a missile at them. So that the world sees that this is an exceptional power. It does what it wants. And take, for example, the case of Bill Clinton, who was the president of the United States some time back, for the younger listeners. He had a domestic issue. He got involved with the secretary in a manner that he ought not to have. Hillary even left the White House briefly, which is not like Hillary. And people were so, wow, I mean, the president of the United States in a jackpot. So what did he do? He announced that he had identified a chemical weapons facility in Sudan, which was a threat to America. And they were developing these chemicals. And something had to be done, so he fired a missile, more than one, actually, destroyed it. You remember, Phil?
I do.
And
It was a pharmaceutical manufacturing company, and it was the only one that Sudan had.
So chemicals, see? Yeah. And a little mistake. A little mistake. Yes. So that's what they did. So and he by the as they talk about the news cycle, so about 3 or 4 days later, he was a champion in the war against bad people. And he by that time, the secretary issue was being, you know, handled by other people. And he went on to live happily ever after. So that's how far they will go. Another shocking example of this kind of stuff is that when President Xi had a meeting, people may forget, President Xi of China was in Florida. I think he went to Mar-a-Lago, I mean, the real headquarters of the real guy, not White House. That, you know, he met him in Florida, I believe. And they were together for a meeting when Trump, President Trump, told President Xi that he had fired a missile at Syria. Now, again, that's a violation of what they call protocol. You don't involve, here's a guy sitting there, he's a major world leader, and he's your backdrop for your little story. And if you remember, it involved chocolate cake. He said it was Trump said, oh, it was the best chocolate cake I ever saw. And I told him that we just fired missiles at the Syrian terrorist base. I think, by the way, again, that was chemical weapons too. That was the claim, was that was chemical weapons.
Yes, that's yes.
If there's one, they love that stuff, chemical weapons. Anyhow, he said he did it. All by that was frankly, in terms of protocol, that is to humiliate the Chinese leader, because he has to sit there while a president of the United States brags that he is violating international law because on his own say so. And you're a fellow world leader, you belong to the United Nations, and he's doing this while you're there. Now that is, you're making two points at the same time. So anyway, that's why, study the great balloon matter. If you want, for your homework, of course, watch Dr. Strangelove, which is the truest film, the truest story ever told about American foreign policy and militarism. Dr. Strangelove hits every point. And they're not mistaken. Now remember how it ends, because we're headed in that direction. This, by the way, is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM, and I don't know if we found some. Oh, we did. We have a bit of music. We're gonna play a bit of music, and then Phil and I will come back and talk about this February 19 phenomenon, the anti-war demonstration. And here's somebody famous.
It was back in 1942, I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river, that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on, I forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be nervous, Nelly.
Here we are, producing on air. It is the Taylor Report, CIT. That was Pete Seeger. Knee-deep in the big muddy, suggesting that executive power in the United States has been leading American people and others into wars which ought not to take place in the first place. And eventually, by the way, the people who carry them out in order to build their careers often end up destroying themselves and their careers. Before we go to the, we're going to talk about this demonstration and the significance of it. I would just say about the appointment of Ms. El-Khawabi to be the head of an Islamophobic research phenomena, to appointed by the Prime Minister. This is never should have happened. If you want to, and you should want to fight Islamophobia, that's your goal. That's what you want to do. You need to consult with all parties, talk about it, name a individual and perhaps others who have the confidence of everyone, so that you can focus on the on the issue of Islamophobia. The Prime Minister, for reasons known to him, actually went around his own party, members of his party in Quebec, say they weren't, nobody discussed it with them, this appointment. The appointment was of an individual who writes for the Toronto Star, or used to write for the Toronto Star. And on this subject, which we talk about in the country a lot, or well, we certainly talk more than we need to and do little less than we should, expressed opinions as a columnist, which I thought years ago when I saw them, I thought this is a mistaken view of Canada and what it ought to be doing on this front. And it involves the ancient problem, the established problem of Canada, a failure to recognize that Quebec is a nation. Now, by the way, Parliament, on one occasion under Harper, they put the vote on the saying Quebec is a nation, and the Parliament, as often for some curious reason, unanimously said it was. If you say it is a nation, then that means that you can't transplant the assumptions that you might find in another nation into that nation. You have to have, the only way you can do it is through a dialogue. But in this case, an individual from Ontario was appointed, and as was pointed out by Chantal Hébert, one of her better, perhaps the best columns she ever wrote was on, and I recommend you just go to Chantal about this. But she said there'd been a moment, and you have to repeat it, a philosophy professor, actually here at Toronto, University of Toronto, had written about the issue of racism and about ethnic minorities and the national issue. And he said, if you were going to do that in Canada, rather than taking on the U.S. model, you ought to look at Canadian history. And the first to have grievance on the issue of national oppression and discrimination would be French Canada. And when Ms. El-Khawabi saw that, she tweeted, "This makes me puke," when he said that. Well, she apparently doesn't think that anymore. She now says, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Well, you're right. You shouldn't have said it. But let's talk about the bigger thing. This is not something that we're very honest about. This discussion of Quebec is rarely dealt with candidly. But one aspect pointed out by Chantal Hébert was that she said, is she aware when she, that makes her puke, the idea that Quebec, the French Canadians, suffered discrimination. She says she's in Ontario where they banned the French language. Banned it. I mean, look at Manitoba and out west where people being taught French had to do it secretly. I mean, serious oppression. We're talking, and incidentally, there's been violence between English and French. This is part of it. This is what makes us Canada. This is a fundamental matter. It's like talking about Belgium, and you let's remember, Belgium too has a national question. You have Flemish and Walloon. Here we have French, English. No, that's not the entire end of the. It's not the entire spectrum of problems, but that is a fundamental problem, the language issue. And the Prime Minister is just, frankly, just playing games. Chantal Hébert said, isn't there anybody in his leader? He said, by the way, that he was only slightly aware of her views. Slightly? You're appointed. This is a major appointment, but this is a touchy subject. We do have Islamophobia. My God, a family was run over and killed by a maniac, racist maniac, in London. And we've had attacks on mosques across the country. We've had Muslims come under attack. That's a fact. So if you're going to start, take this matter up, do it in a way that conducive to a positive result. But the approach taken didn't include his own party, federal. And the Prime Minister says, I didn't know about that. Well, for crying out loud, what kind of a circus are you running? Because, he could have called me. I could have told him there's a problem. And now he has people angry at each other. Now they're saying, you have to have her. No, you don't. You really should start over, and you need to apologize to everybody. He should apologize to El Gawabi, actually, because when you vet, it's not negative to vet somebody. If you say to them, look, you're a really great person, we like what you've done, but this aspect here is a problem, and we don't want to put you into a hot seat, so we're not, we'll consult with you, but we have to, that's what vetting is about, to avoid what he seems to have almost deliberately created. So everyone should stand back and say, no, do it right. Don't take somebody, a Toronto Star writer, who I don't blame her, but she doesn't seem to be very conversant with Canadian, with the history of the problems involving, first of all, France and England, who fought it out and created this entity as a result of the Seven Years' War, where recognition of language and church and all that were sensitive matters and agreed to. By the way, the Anglos really hated the way the Crown handled it, the way Britain handled it, because there have been outbreaks of violence when the English were nakedly ruling. And there was 1837 rebellion, and damage was done to property and family and loss of life. And there was an agreement by the British Crown that they should pay some compensation to French families that lost homes, farms, etc. The Parliament was burned to the ground. Canadian Parliament was burned to the ground by Anglos, who were mad because the French were going to be compensated. Maybe she might want to study that, by the way. There's always Evangeline. You could read the poem. But let's treat it seriously. And lastly, on the matter, where is Islamophobia? Yes, we have it. And it must be resisted. If you're going to talk about it, you better talk about the foreign policy of the Canadian government, the American government. We're part of NATO. We're part of the enterprise that attacked Libya. I already mentioned Canada is still to this day trying to overthrow the government of Syria. We are freezing the funds of the people of Afghanistan, keeping their money because we don't like their policies. We have demonstrations about the Islamic Republic, and the language is highly charged. And your foreign policy feeds in, and I've left out Palestine, West Bank, Gaza, unresolved issues, which are daily violent, every day. And it involves Islam, because some of the leaders, certainly in the Gaza area, the leadership is Islamic. So you have to understand that if you've been running an empire, your Islamophobia is going to come with that, based particularly if you try to dictate to states in that region, West Asia, I'm learning to say. Anyway, so in other words, in my opinion, they should just start completely afresh and in dialogue with, and it's trying to seek a consensus so that everybody's on side and we work together, but not this, the prime minister has a harebrained idea and then the rest of us end up punching each other on street corners. This has not been helpful, the whole stupid approach. This is, oddly enough, the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. I'm here with Phil Conlon, and Phil, we have some a big matter here. On February the 19th, an organization, a coalition called Rage Against the War. Am I right?
It's the Rage Against the War Machine, they call them themselves, which is also was a name of an old... It's similar to the name of an old rock group that might or not be associated with this, but it's got a very interesting and unusual.
Before we move on, I didn't get that.
There was a rock group that was very popular in.
There
its
you
day,
go. Right, all right, yeah, you're right.
You're right. All right. Rage Against the Machine, and now this has been expanded.
I want to ask you a very specific question. Yeah. On the 19th, there's going to be the. This demonstration is the first anti-war demonstration of any note anybody's seen since the conflict began, Ukraine-Russia. I want to know, what's the demands? And I believe it's there.
Not one more penny for a war in Ukraine.
That's number one.
Negotiate peace. That's number two.
If you could go slower.
Stop. Negotiate peace. Stop the war inflation. Disband NATO. Global nuclear de-escalation, slash the Pentagon budget, abolish the CIA and military-industrial deep state, abolish war and empire, restore civil liberties, free Julian Assange.
Now that's...
That's quite a list of... Those are great demands. Every one of them are...
I haven't got a problem with that list, actually. This is very striking. Now, let's go through the speakers. My understanding is... the one that strikes me is Dennis Kucinich. If there's anybody in American politics who's got a straight-up, clean, or honorable record, it is Dennis Kucinich. And, of course... he's a Democrat, by the way. I have seen him interviewed recently. He remains, I would say to him, you got to have your head examined. But anyway, after what was done to him by the Democratic Party, they did not nominate him. He is a very popular congressman, but the party ran somebody against him and took his seat away from him. He was once the mayor of Cleveland.
As a very young person, he was the mayor of Cleveland. Yes, that's right.
Really, and he's been very principled, very clear that he's against America's, they used to call it the warfare state. I don't know why we don't keep on saying that. But at any rate, the perpetual wars, and Dennis Kucinich. So at any rate, Dennis Kucinich is one of the speakers. You have the other names there. You want to read them?
I'm having trouble finding the names.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so one of the names is Medea Benjamin, who is a pacifist. She has an organization called Code Pink, and she's pretty consistent on issues of war and peace. She doesn't like war, right?
Yes.
Then I hear that this Republican senator says he's going to speak.
Who?
A Republican senator, Ron Paul. That's
no, he's actually, that's the, the father of the senator, Raul Paul. I wish they'd given him a different name. It's a hard Raul Paul. But Ron, the father, who used to be actually in the, I believe he was in Congress. He may have been in the Senate too. But his son, yes, Raul Paul, who, if just to identify him, he recently, at a Senate hearing, had Victoria Nuland in front of him, and he made a very, this is very apropos of our work at the Taylor Reports, things we talk about. He said to Victoria Nuland, you are promoting the idea that you're going to charge President Putin of Russia with war crimes, and you're going to go, you say, to international tribunal. And she said, yes, and we're going to do that. And she said, it's going to be, and there is a precedent. The former Yugoslavia and Rwanda were successful tribunals, ha, ha, ha. And and therefore, this is the path we're, and he said, well, you understand. I he said, I'm not going to debate whether you have crimes involved. That isn't pertinent to my point. He says, that what is most significant, I would think, is that that means that you're not going to have any negotiations. There's not going to be any. You're telling basically that the war is just going to go on because you, by this step, you are criminalizing the person you're talking to or potentially could be talking to. She didn't deny that. And it is not a small matter. If people want to see an end to the fighting and a permanent arrangement guaranteeing peace for the people in the region and for the world, because this is a superpowers now are involved, you're going to have to talk. And I hate to remind them of their own cliches, but, you know, you don't negotiate with your friends. But for the end of war, you negotiate with your opponent. So at any rate, back to Senator Paul. Yeah, he's going to be speaking. There's a number of people. I have some of them. I can, well, offhand, of course, is Max Blumenthal of The Gray Zone, Anya Parampol, and Tulsi Gabbard is going to be there. Now, Tulsi Gabbard's always been she really got the Democrats in going in circles when she ran for president. She called out the current vice president very well and also Joe Biden.
And also Hillary. She called him,
oh my gosh,
the Queen of Sleaze, and boy, did the name stick.
Chris Hedges is speaking. Scott Horton is speaking. Garland Nixon is speaking. These are, you can, but keep your eye on the bouncing ball. There's always a lot of arguing and struggling about, putting people on platforms, pulling them off. Jill Stein is speaking. I have a lot of respect for Jill Stein. And of course, probably a name that gets people excited is Scott Ritter, the Marine officer. He's going to be speaking. He's even written about it. This is, our listeners will know that there is debate or arguments about this business, and I think that's great, personally. I think it's really, Scott Ritter, like I mentioned, he's already writing about how people don't want him to speak. I've seen one attack on him saying, Ritter says he's not against war. Well, he never said, if you're against war, that would mean you're a pacifist. He never claimed to be a pacifist. And I would say to all those people who regard themselves as leftists that two-thirds of them are definitely not pacifists based on all the armed movements that they're excited about. And so for them to pretend now they're all know, you have to be against war per se. Well, of course, we're all against war per se, but there's a lot of struggles where there is no choice but to, you know, for armed matters. And of course, we here we're talking about bring it formula to bring it to an end. And again, I hope if people will argue about this, I hope they will talk about it. But I would like them all to answer, speak to the point. They call for, the first demand is no more military supplies, no more involvement, in other words, material involvement with the war. And the second is negotiate. And we've said this over and over here in Canada and elsewhere to other people like the NDP, the Liberals. What is your plan? Are you just you all want to just put on the gear, wear the hard hat, and you know, and the body armor? Or do you have a plan? No, they don't have any plan. Their whole plan is send them more things to kill people. That's not a plan for except to destroy people. So what do you propose? The Pope, for example, says he'd be happy to participate in some kind of choice of interlocutors to bring about peace. Okay, why don't we sign on with that? Obviously, you'd have to. You work through the necessary agreements to have a peace. But they also, and this is, give them credit. It says. Can't see the title, but it says get rid of NATO, basically. Probably have it more clear.
Disband NATO.
Disband it.
Yeah.
And if you go to their site, there's a paragraph explaining it. And it's frankly, those are all good demands. They also call for the slashing the Pentagon budget, and they put it in terms that every American understands. They say the Pentagon can only account in auditing for 35% of its budget. They can't explain where the rest of the money went. There is no forensic audit of 70% of that budget. And we're talking trillions. So these are matters that every American and Canadian ought to be talking about. They also call for the dismantling of the CIA as it's currently constituted, pointing out that they make trouble around the world, but also they put American citizens under surveillance. And you remember, Phil, there was a thing called the Church Committee. You remember the Church
Committee? I remember the Church Committee, Senator Church, yes.
This is where, you know, we're going back to his finding, which was Americans' freedoms are being taken away in the name of, you know, fighting the dark other, wherever it might be. And Americans demanded transparency. This whole business of, you know, right to see government records, particularly your own personal records, which they keep on every citizen, that all came out of the Church Committee. I date it from the presidency of Ronald Reagan, that they turned a corner and said, oh, we don't want to hear about that anymore. But that all grew out of the debacle of Vietnam, and frankly, they have the debacle of Afghanistan on their hands now, and they have others, which should lead to an examination. What are these operators like Victoria Nuland up to, and why does Victoria Nuland still have a job? And this will all be discussed when we. All these speakers will be addressing this. I think this is going to only lead to good things, frankly, because in Canada, for example, we're in a position where every party is a war party. They're all NATO parties. They're just adjuncts of NATO. They talk about the inflation. Stop the war inflation. I like that one because I remember I was watching Chrystia Freeland, and she said, oh, this inflation. Well, she says, that's Putin's fault. No, it's not.
Everything's Putin's fault.
Yeah, well, but, you know, in other words, well, we're going to be in this thing with him. Yeah. Therefore, we're going to have inflation. If you don't like the fact that your income is falling way behind prices, if you don't like that, just get unhappy with him. No. Get unhappy with the people who led you into this mess and say, no, you don't have to be engaged there. Which, if you're going to be engaged, it should be to try to negotiate a resolution of the conflict, which could have happened way back. But the United States and expanding NATO, as we had on this program many people, but the best one was Diana Johnson. And she said, well, who are you kidding? You say you didn't provoke it? You've been doing nothing but provoking. You have enlisted these small states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. Poland is not a small state, big one. It also, by the way, would be happy to pick up part of Ukraine and may do it yet.
Well, they're talking about it.
But as Diana Johnson says, you've been putting weaponry there, and you think, what Russian leader can ignore that? They can't ignore it. They have to say, why are you doing that? Because clearly it's aimed at us, and you think we're going to just sit here while you put up your artillery and set the gauges to make sure you can destroy us? No, we're not going to do that. And there was plenty of opportunity for this to be talked about, but the U.S. took the position, we don't have to talk to anybody. We just do these things. Well, that's a disastrous policy. And again, I would point at the those people who consider themselves social democrats, you know, to kindly join the effort to tell us how you're going to achieve peace other than by recruiting every NDPer to put on a uniform and go fight, which you're not going to do. Everybody wants to run their mouths about these things. Anyway, Phil, read those. I think we have 2 minutes to go. Read those ten demands again.
These are the 10 demands.
For the February 19 demonstration.
Not one more penny for the war in Ukraine.
Second one.
Negotiate peace.
Three.
Stop the war inflation.
Four.
Disband NATO.
Five.
Global nuclear de-escalation.
I got myself into this doing number six.
Slash the Pentagon budget.
Seven.
Abolish the CIA and military industrial deep state.
Good. Nine.
You forgot abolish war and empire, but restore civil liberties. And you can't forget ten.
Ten.
Free Julian Assange.
Hey, isn't that great?
Yeah.
Yes, that's a great collection.
Commit crimes and you get the Nobel Prize. Report on it, you get a jail sentence.
By the way, I invite everybody who's positive, negative, or strange about the subject, which many are, go ahead and argue, because those are the things that need to be argued about. This is the Taylor Report. I want to thank Phil Conlon. I want to thank Shay. And we'll see you next week, and we'll let you hear a little more Pete Seeger.
Waist deep, neck deep, soon even a tall man will be over his head. Where? Waist deep, big muddy, the big fool says to push on.